From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Sound Off Open Lines, where you become the program. Here's what's happening. Federal law enforcement officials are saying there is no specific credible threat to any events surrounding the upcoming Super Bowl between the Carolina Panthers and the Denver Broncos. But the government is not taking any chances, deploying a wide array of assets all over the place to assist state and local authorities in securing the NFL championship game. As we've been reporting, the World Health Organization has indeed declared a global emergency over the explosive spread of the Zika virus, which has been linked to birth defects in the Americas, primarily Brazil, calling it an extraordinary event that poses a public health threat to other parts of the world as well. The UN agency took this rare step despite a lack of definitive evidence proving directly that the mosquito-borne virus is causing a surge in babies born with brain defects and abnormalities, small heads, in Brazil, following an outbreak in French Polynesia. As interest rates turn negative around the world, that's right, negative, the Federal Reserve is asking banks to consider the possibility of the same thing happening here in the United States. In its annual stress test for 2016, the Fed said it will assess the resilience of big banks to a number of possible situations, including one where the rate on the three-year U.S. Treasury bill stays below zero for a prolonged period. Andre Aglachon, author of Thieves in the Temple, America Under the Federal Reserve. Andre, first of all, what does it mean, negative interest rates? How does that work?
Well, basically, when you have negative interest rates, it means that the money that you have in the bank is not going to pay you any interest on it. You may have to pay to quarter your money in a bank.
Jeez.
And, yeah, that's a pretty scary scenario for most people. I mean, nobody would want to pay to have their money deposited in a bank. And it does not represent really a forecast that the Fed is looking at. But they are planning for an eventual slip back towards recession in the United States. And this whole test is calibrated around economic conditions that tend to indicate market disruptions all around the world and a basic economic contraction all over the world. And it is only a test. However, you know, given the fact that the Fed is conducting this test, it tends to indicate to me, though they say, well, we're a long way away from contemplating, you know, such a rate reduction, it tends to indicate to me that the Fed is expecting some sort of downturn in 2016, George.
Yeah, they feel it, don't they, Andre?
Absolutely. I mean, many people have written about it, you know, the fact that we may have further economic contractions in 2016. So the Fed is looking to test about 33 banks around the country, including Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase and Company, and just to see how they would be able to withstand a global recession and a doubling of the U.S. unemployment rate to around 10%, along with some, you know, a small degree of deflation.
Okay, we'll see what happens. Andre, thank you so much. What a team of economists we've got on this program with Andre Aglachon, Gerald Celente, Mish Shedlock, Catherine Austin Fitz, just superb people. Howard Bloom. Punxsutawney Phil, the Pennsylvania groundhog, renowned for his ability to forecast the onset of spring, did not see his shadow after emerging from his burrow, predicting now an early spring. There's some regions of the country right now that are in 60-degree weather when it should be 20. It's unbelievable. Well, whether you are a night owl like we are or an early bird, don't bother fighting the impulse because it's probably in your genes, according to a study. Scientists have long known that all plants and animals, from lowly phytoplankton to Homo sapiens, have internal biological clocks attuned to a 24-hour cycle. They say within this circadian rhythm, individuals of some species, including ours, may have a natural preference for day or night. Think about your own lifestyle. Do you? In the news at coasttocoastam.com, an amazing story about China releasing incredible images of the moon's surface. The Planetary Society has posted these pictures. The Chinese U2 rover was driving across the moon's surface, taking these pictures, just breathtaking. They've got some incredible high-definition photos. And it's time now for Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates' weekly universe update. What do you got for us, Dr. Sky?
Well, good morning, George, and good morning, everyone. We have, George, the planetary conjunction continues, and just when we thought it was all over, it actually gets probably the best during this week and early next week. Here's a tip. Look, George, and all the listeners, to the southeastern part of the sky just before sunrise. And on early Wednesday morning, the 3rd of February, the moon is kind of situated, the crescent moon, the waning crescent moon, is situated, George, right in between these major planets. Jupiter to the far right, Mars to the left of it, the moon, and just to the lower left of the bright edge of the moon, the planet Saturn. The show gets better, as we talked about last week. Look low in the southeast. Venus and Mercury make this really spectacular. So if you have cameras out there, and who, George, doesn't have at least a cell phone or a smartphone?
It's all, everybody's got them now.
Oh, yeah. And then one more tip I wanted to pass along is another great object of the week. If you go out of doors and you're not able to get up early morning, look around sunset high in the south. There's a small group of stars that many people, George, mistake as the Little Dipper. It's actually the star cluster called the Pleiades, about 444 light years away, thus the light left around the year 1572. But what's interesting is that these are all hot blue stars, about 100 million years old, George, and they're moving across the sky. They're about the size of your thumbnail extended when your arm is extended. And many people have seen this, excuse me, thinking that it's the Little Dipper, but this is a cluster of stars, George, that are moving across the sky. They'll be moving across the sky over millions of years. We get to see them good, and it's very interesting. In folklore, the Japanese car company, of course, Subaru, uses this as their logo, and in Japanese, it means to unite or coming together. So great stuff to see this week, George, and always check out our photorecon.net site for updates on space and aviation. Great stuff in the month of February.
Sure is. Thank you, Stephen. Dr. Sky. Superstition is the belief in supernatural abilities. One event causes another without any natural process linking the two events, such as astrology and certain aspects linked to religion, omens, witchcraft, prophecy. They contradict natural science. But what are these superstitions and what causes them? And are you superstitious? In a moment, Mitch Horowitz joins us. He's an expert on the occult. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Mitch Horowitz was raised in a world of Bigfoot stories, UFO sightings, Carlos Castaneda books. He grew up determined to find the truth behind it all. He's written on everything, from the war on witches to the secret life of Ronald Reagan. He's a vice president and editor-in-chief at Chartier Penguin, the division of Penguin Books, dedicated to metaphysical literature. As a matter of fact, he published Whitley Strieber's book last night, The Strange in the Natural. Mitch is also the host of Origins, a new web series on the history of superstitions as well. I was with him this weekend in Denver taping our Beyond Belief television program, and Mitch, you did a great job there.
Oh, thanks, George. It was great to be with you and your crew. Great weekend.
And we had Whitley on last night with Jeffrey Kripal talking about the supernatural. And
wonderful team, those guys.
They really were. They did a great job with the book.
Yeah. It's probably the first time in history that somebody who has had an abduction experience, as Whitley has teamed up with a very respected scholar of religion.
That's right.
And this is really quite unprecedented.
It seemed like a strange mix, but they hit it off.
They really have hit it off tremendously. And it's because Jeff has the capacity to really look at something with fresh eyes. He doesn't think in categories, he thinks in questions. So when he meets somebody like Whitley, he doesn't rush to put him into a box. He wants to hear his story, and some very adventurous things can happen from there.
Indeed. Mitch, let's talk a little bit about superstitions for the next couple hours. We'll take calls from people next hour who may be superstitious, but how did superstitions all start?
You know, it's really the earliest form of human religion, and I think that we remain attached to superstitions in our hypercharged, digitized world today because it's a connection to our primeval ancestors. They lived by the seasons. They lived by the cycles of the planets. And these things have never left us. It's almost like it's something in our DNA in a certain way. For example, the number 13, you will find ancient historical references to the number 13 in cultures ranging from ancient India to the Nordic cultures to early Celtic culture, and they were all afraid of it. Why was that? And this has remained a nagging part of our psyche today.
As a nation, how do we rate as a superstitious nation?
We like to think of ourselves, of course, as a hyper-rational society. We're a little quieter about our superstitions. We're a little more private about our superstitions. But they are there just as much as in any other society. You will have presidents like Franklin Roosevelt who carry around a lucky rabbit's foot. Barack Obama carries around a little tiny figurine of the ancient Hindu monkey god, among some other good luck charms. There are people from, you know, high-tech entrepreneurs to presidential candidates who are quite superstitious. They can be private about it, and that's really what marks the difference between us and some other societies. We don't talk about it quite as much, but the beliefs are there.
You know, Mitch, we were talking when we were taping our television program Beyond Belief about the rabbit's foot, and
yeah.
When you think of it, it's kind of gross, keeping the foot of a dead animal in
right.
your pocket or in your purse yeah. or wherever yeah. you keep this thing.
Right. Well, ancient people always saw the rabbit as a symbol of good luck, partly because rabbits are very good at procreation, and that was something that was very necessary in agricultural societies. You had to have kids who would help you around the farm. Now, in the 19th century, actors, who were a famously superstitious lot, used to carry a rabbit's foot in their makeup boxes and use it as a powder puff, and eventually it came to be seen as a good luck symbol, and it has remained so. When Franklin Roosevelt ran for president in 1932, he carried a rabbit's foot with him, which today is at his presidential library and museum in upstate New York. It's probably the only presidential rabbit foot we know of, and it's under a glass case today.
We're going to talk about a number of superstitions, and I want to get your reaction to that.
Sure.
I got to tell you one, though. My grandfather, my mother's father, used to believe that if a shoe or just a shoe were on its side instead of, you know, a flat, you would have to spit on the sole and put it back down, or it meant something could happen to the person who wears the shoes.
That's very interesting. You know, there are superstitions that have very deep roots in ancient cultures, but have gotten translated in different ways, sometimes in very local parts of the U.S. Now, in ancient Vedic culture, shoes and anything that you put on your feet were considered kind of cursed. You weren't supposed to bring them in the house. You weren't supposed to let them near loved ones. Sometimes these things would travel through trade routes and things like that, and they might have reached your dad locally, and the idea of the bottom of the shoe, the sole of a shoe, as containing something evil, something unclean in a more than physical sense, took hold. That's probably where that comes from.
Well, and what it's done to me now, George Norrie, as the boy, used to hear this. Now, I can't look at a shoe if it's on its side. I got to put it down. I don't spit on the sole.
Right.
I don't go that far. But I have to flip them over.
Now, there are hat superstitions as well. I can't put a hat on a bed. And I'm always telling my
really?
Kids, don't put a hat on a bed. Yeah.
What's that superstition?
That is another superstition that goes back to ancient India. It was actually very practical. A hat or a turban could have head lice, and you didn't want to put it on a bed. So it started out as a practical thing, but it got adopted in America probably through an African-American system of magic called hoodoo, which influenced a lot of folks down south. Now, Elvis Presley was apparently very superstitious about hats on beds. He would yell at people if they put a hat on a bed. I find myself doing the same thing today, telling my kids, and even when I'm packing luggage,
wow.
I will not put a hat on the bed. It's just something that's gotten under my skin, and I practice it here in our home.
My mother is obsessed if a bird from the outside comes into the house. I'm not talking about a caged parakeet or a pet. But if a bird comes into the house somehow from outside, whether it breaks through a window, smashes into it, or something, she says that she was told when she was a little girl that means somebody's going to die.
Yep. And you know what? That was an ancient Roman belief. And to me, it's fascinating. You know, some people would shake their head and say, oh, gee, you know, that's silly. Modern people shouldn't believe that kind of thing. But she had the very same belief that one of our ancient ancestors in Rome may have had, 2,000 years ago. And that to me is fascinating, how enduring it is that you can go from ancient Rome to Middle America and someone still has that belief. It doesn't govern their lives, but it does give you a kind of pinch of humility about life, about the unknown. And I think that's a beautiful thing in some ways.
You've said that a wedding is very superstitious. Tell me about that.
Weddings are the most occult rituals around, and people don't even know that they're engaging in all kinds of occult and superstitious rituals. For example, bridesmaids came about through an ancient Roman custom. The idea was that you would have bridesmaids to distract evil spirits, so that if they were going to possess the bride or haunt the bride in some way, they'd be distracted and visit their interests or affections on somebody else. The groom carries the bride traditionally over the threshold because the Romans believed that there were evil creatures who lurked underneath the threshold, so he's symbolically protecting her. People sometimes throw rice at a wedding based on an ancient Asian practice that says rice will distract evil spirits. Weddings are the most occult rituals around.
Jewish people, and I've been to many Jewish weddings, will smash a glass.
That's right.
They wrap it up and then they stomp on it.
That's right. That's right. It's meant to symbolize the destruction of the ancient temple, and that even in a period of joy, even in a period of good times, you should just take a moment, pause, remember more somber times. It helps you take stock of life in a way.
We're with Mitch Horowitz, who, by the way, has written several books on his own, including Occult America. Mitch, have you ever broken a superstition and regretted it?
Yeah, there was one superstition of a sort that I did break, and it had kind of a strange result. My wife and I were traveling in the country of Belize in Central America. There is a very powerful legend in Belize that the hills, the highlands, are occupied by these little men, dwarves or fairies. And these are mischievous creatures, and they can frighten people. And there was a cab driver telling us a story about these little men.
Are these the duendes?
I'm sorry?
Are they called duendes?
Yes. That's one of the terms that's used.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And so these little men that occupy the hills, they frighten people. And there's lots of educated folks who talk about this. It's a very strongly held belief. So a cab driver was kind of frightening us, telling us some of these stories. And we were canoeing down a very isolated river in the highlands. And I started saying to my wife, you know, I didn't like that cab driver scaring us, this local legend. I didn't place any stock in it. And suddenly, the place was silent. There was not another being around that we could hear or see. An enormous rock came rolling down the hill right at our canoe and splashed right in the water. So immediately, I shut up. There's something about superstitions that make us humble, and we need to be humble sometimes.
You've talked about Hillary Clinton having an occult secret. What is that?
It's very interesting. When she was first lady in the first term of her husband, Bill Clinton, she has a certain taste for New Age spirituality, and she invited a New Age guru by the name of Jean Houston, who's a friend of mine and who I respect very deeply, to the White House to have some creativity sessions. And this got translated in the press as the two of them conducting seances in the White House to contact the spirit of Eleanor Roosevelt. Now, they did do something like that, but it was really a creativity exercise. It was an exercise in the use of the imagination. But Bob Woodward at the Washington Post got hold of this and said, hey, the First Lady is meeting with Jean Houston, this New Age guru, and holding seances in the White House. And nobody was able to do a very good job of explaining it. And so Woodward wrote about this in the Washington Post. He wrote about it in books, and it caused a big furor. Hillary has seemed to have been able to distance herself from that period. It hasn't come up much recently. But there was a time where she really experimented with New Age spirituality.
The Bush family, too, they've got a few little occult roots, don't they?
Yeah, it's pretty freaky. People think of the Bushes as kind of straight arrow conservatives, but the truth is, their ancestor in America, whose name was the Reverend George Bush, who was a popular and controversial minister in this country in the mid-19th century, was very interested in seances and psychics and channeling. He was a Swedenborgian minister. He practiced a mystical form of Christianity called Swedenborgianism, and he was famous and in some ways infamous for being a big defender of mediums and spiritualists and psychics. In fact, he had a pulpit just a couple of blocks away from where we live on the east side of Manhattan. He held it for 1 year, and he died in 1859. And if you look at a picture of the Reverend George Bush, you can throw the name into Google, he is the spitting image of George W. Bush.
I love
with
it.
A beard.
Stay with us, Mitch. We're coming back for more. We're going to talk about going under ladders, black cats, and a whole bunch more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Mitch Horowitz with us. Sometime tonight, we'll tell you about Mitch's 30-day mental challenge, which is a mind exercise course in positive thinking. We'll talk about that. Mitch, let's talk a little bit about curses. Are they superstitions as well, or is that separate?
Oh, for sure. You know, curses are part of the whole network of superstitions that humanity has believed in. In fact, there's a presidential candidate, Jeb Bush, who may be experiencing a kind of curse right now.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who was thought to be unbeatable, you know, at least in terms of the Republican primaries. And today, the man can't seem to catch a cold.
He was the heir apparent 2 years ago. That's all people talked about.
Absolutely. He was just basically thought to be the anointed one, end of story, and he was going to sail through the primaries, and the opposite has occurred. Now, there was a weird political superstition that was very popular in this country in the 19th century, and it was this, that anything that comes in threes is bad luck in politics. This came about because most presidents who had three names, like John Quincy Adams or Martin Van Buren, either died in office or didn't win a second term. So threes was thought to be bad luck in politics. He would be the third Bush getting elected to the White House. Now, this superstition has long been forgotten about, but when you look at the kind of bad luck he's having, it makes no more or less sense than anything that's getting reported in the polls, which have been notoriously inaccurate, even in terms of the recent finish in Iowa. So there's an old superstition that hasn't been talked about for a very long time in this country, but who knows? Maybe Jeb is unfortunately carrying around a curse because he's the third Bush.
There are superstitions about clowns. I happen to dislike clowns myself personally, Mitch. What are some of them?
This is terrifying stuff. Ever since the early 1980s, there have been stories circulating about killer clowns. Now, this is before the Stephen King novel,
It.
This is before the infamous serial killer, John Wayne Gacy. There were kids in Atlanta, Boston, and Chicago in the early 1980s who started telling police that they were getting followed around by these threatening killer clowns, guys in clown makeup who were driving around in windowless vans, trying to lure kids in the vans, threatening them with knives, hanging around in parks, hanging around in schoolyards. And it's the kind of thing that would easily be dismissible if it were just one locale. But it was kids all over the country in the pre-internet days who had no contact with one another. And this has continued. There are these so-called killer clown sightings today in Chicago, in New Mexico, throughout California. You just go online, they're all over the place. And there are mainstream news outlets, including ABC News, that are reporting on this. This is something that doesn't seem to go away. And it's very peculiar when something like this goes viral in the pre-digital days among kids who have no way of reaching one another. So there's some very weird stuff going on there, and it's not easily dismissible.
And Mitch, even if somebody was joking around in a clown's outfit, isn't that being kind of risky? I mean, somebody's going to take a pot shot at them.
Exactly. In this day and age, and some of these people are just cruel pranksters. There's no question about that. Some of these people are cruel pranksters. It's going on in Europe, too. Yeah, they're going to pick on the wrong person, and somebody's going to respond in a way that they feel is self-defensive, and a tragedy is going to occur.
Like somebody who dresses up like Bigfoot. I would not dress up like Bigfoot and walk around freeways and roads and rural areas, because you're going to get shot.
I sure, right, exactly. And, you know, when people do this in connection with the whole killer clown thing, once in a while they will brandish weapons. There was a killer clown scare in Europe where some people were actually carrying around machetes or guns or toy guns. You're just asking for an act of violence, and it's very, very dangerous stuff. And this is a scary, persistent urban legend.
What about the scary superstition, a story of Bloody Mary?
Oh, yeah. That is one of the scariest. Now, many
people... Hold on. Let me tell everyone to turn down their lights. Pull the blanket up under their chin.
Right.
If you're driving in the car, don't look in your rearview mirror. You might see eyes looking back at you. Now, go ahead, Mitch.
Now, I want to strongly suggest that none of your viewers do this unless they're in an unusually adventurous mood, but they have been warned. The legend around Bloody Mary is this. You walk in to your bathroom. You close off the lights. You close the door so that you are in a state of pitch darkness.
In the bathroom.
In the bathroom.
All right.
You look in the mirror and you say three times, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary, come to me tonight.
Oh.
And you see what happens.
Oh.
Now, usually these stories do not have a happy ending. There are a lot of kids who have done these things at pajama parties, and the pajama parties are quickly over, and they tell cops and parents and teachers that some bloody apparition has appeared to them. This has been going on since the 1950s. And it has roots in all kinds of different superstitions. For a very long time, people have believed that mirrors are some kind of a portal to another world.
Yes.
A mirror can steal your soul. In the early 20th century, it was popular among kids in England to look in the mirror with a candle, and it would divine who you would marry, or it might divine when you would die. There have been all kinds of superstitions, ancient and modern, around mirrors. Bloody Mary was one term among many that got used for witches in medieval England. And all these things mixed together in this kind of superstitious soup, and kids came up with this. There's a new trend going on right now among kids. My son, Caleb, who's 11, knows all about it. They're making these kind of homemade Ouija boards with a grid with the words yes and no on them. And
well, that's the game's called Charlie pencil. Charlie, right?
Charlie Charlie. And my son was just telling me a story this evening where another kid told him that his father used this little homemade Ouija board and said, Charlie Charlie, are you here? Nothing happened. And the father told the son that he went to bed that night, woke up the next morning, and he had scratches all over his back. Now, I can't speak to the veracity of the story, but this is what's going on. These, you know, it's funny how kids will take ancient ideas, whether it's Ouija boards or mirror superstitions, and they'll remake them. And it can be scary stuff. You know, I don't know about that dad's story, but that's what he told his son.
Now, with Bloody Mary, does the apparition show up in the dark mirror, or does it show up in the house somewhere during the night?
It's supposed to show up in the house somewhere during the night, which is what makes it all the more frightening. And kids have stories of seeing faces in the window, or seeing eyes behind them in the mirror when they turn on the lights, or the lights flickering in the house. There's no happy endings with the Bloody Mary story.
You know, back to curses for a moment, Mitch. The Kennedy family had a curse put on them a long time ago, and look at all the tragedies that they've had.
It's a very bizarre thing. And interestingly enough, John Kennedy Jr. was somebody who told a fascinating story. I met him once, and we spoke for about an hour. He was a good guy. He was not at all a snob. He was very easy to talk to. Nice guy.
Nice guy.
And really actually a lovely guy.
Tragic
and
story.
He told a story that when he was a teenager, he was kind of getting into some trouble, and his mother, Jackie Onassis, decided to send him out to a dude ranch in Wyoming to spend the summer. And he said that at this dude ranch, there were stories of cattle mutilations circulating among the ranchers. And one time, he and some of his friends were riding horses in a field, and they came upon a cow that had had all the blood drained from its body and had these two very, very neat incisions, like a pair of fangs, but almost like hypodermic incisions in its neck, and all of its blood had been drained, and nobody knew what was going on, but all the ranchers in the area knew about it and were very frightened by it. And Kennedy did write about this as well. He wrote about it in a column in a magazine called George Magazine that he edited.
That's right.
For his
that was his magazine.
Yes, that's right. And he was a wonderful guy, and he just told the story in a very honest, unembarrassed way, and it was a very weird occult incident.
I think had he lived and wanted to get into politics, I think he could have gone all the way up to the presidency.
Yeah, I think that may be so. He was a shy kind of guy, but that only increased his sense of authenticity. He was a really decent, very lovely guy.
Couple more superstitions. Why do people toss salt over their shoulders?
That's one of the oldest ones. In the ancient world, from China to Rome, salt was seen as a form of currency. In fact, salt is the root of our own word salary. And the Romans believed, as did many generations after them, that if you spilled salt, it was like you were possibly going to impoverish yourself. You were spilling away your money. And there was a belief that each of us has a little angel and a little demon hovering over our shoulders. People sometimes see this in old kids' cartoons. And that if you spilled your salt, your salary, you were supposed to toss a little pinch over your left shoulder to blind the demon that was behind you and make sure that you wouldn't be visited by bad luck.
All right, let's talk about ladders. People don't want to go under ladders. How come?
It's very interesting. In the ancient world, convicts would sometimes be hanged by a ladder propped up against a tree. The convicted person would be marched under the ladder, forced to walk up the ladder, and have a noose affixed around his neck and be hanged from a tree. A belief developed that the spirit of the executed person lurked at the bottom of the ladder, and that if you stepped through that space at the bottom of the ladder, you could possibly get possessed, or you might be disrupting some sort of spirit that was resting there at the bottom of the ladder. And it developed into this idea that you shouldn't walk under ladders. And of course, there's a practical side to it as well, and it's never left us.
Black cats. Don't let a black cat run out in front of you.
Right. That's the most famous of all. In the Middle Ages, Europe was overrun by this wild cat population. And cats were kind of considered pests, almost in the way we regard rats today. This was a particular problem in England. Now, older women, widows, spinsters, would sometimes feed these cats the way people will feed pigeons today. And older women were sometimes the target of witchcraft accusations. And since they were surrounded by cats, cats came to be seen as their familiars or their spirit helpers. And there was already an association of black dogs with the devil. So that got translated into cats in the form of the black cat. Black cat came to be seen as an assistant to suspected witches in medieval England. And again, it's never left us. Everyone today, I doubt you could find a single person who doesn't know the superstition around black cats.
People are a little concerned about the number 13, Friday the 13th, 13th
yeah.
floor, 13th seat
right.
on a plane.
It's very interesting.
What's up there?
You know, what you'll find is that in ancient India, it was believed that it was unlucky to have 13 people seated at a banquet table. In Nordic mythology, the god of evil, Loki, was the 13th uninvited guest at a banquet of the gods. Judas was said to be the 13th man at the Last Supper. So over and over throughout different cultures in history, you have this idea that the 13th man, this 13th uninvited guest, was a source of bad luck. Franklin Roosevelt would not sit at a banquet table if there were 13 guests around the table. What's fascinating to me about this is that you've got cultures spanning from the Nordic cultures to Roman cultures to Hindu cultures, all harboring this same idea around the number 13, all separated by vast stretches of time and geography. Why did they all have that same association? To me, that's fascinating.
To break a mirror brings you 7 years bad luck. How'd that happen?
That's an ancient Roman custom. The Romans believed that life renewed itself in seven-year cycles, and that your reflected image was actually your soul. It was the essence of your life. And if you shattered your reflected image, you would disrupt these seven-year cycles of the renewal of life, which roughly followed the cycles of the moon. And so that shattering a mirror would cause you ill health. And again, that superstition has remained with us for literally thousands of years.
It's amazing. If you blow out all your candles on your birthday cake, in one breath, you get whatever you wished for.
So we're told. So we're told. I encourage my kids to try it.
Well, yeah, but at my age right now, it's going to take one heck of a breath to get all those candles out. It was easier a long time ago.
You're filled with vigor.
A cat has nine lives. Where'd that come from?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Ancient Egypt, the Egyptians venerated cats. It's funny, it started out in a very practical way. Cats were very practical creatures who could keep mice and rats and other pests out of grain supplies. And Egyptians just venerated animals, creatures, birds, fish, felines, anything associated with the ancient world. And since the cat had possessed such dexterity and was so useful, it was seen as a creature that had to be blessed. And they began this idea in our consciousness that the cat had multiple lives.
It's amazing what some of these superstitions do and where they came from. Listen to this one. It's bad luck to sing at a table.
Yeah.
You would think that would be good luck.
Right. It's very interesting. Sometimes what happens is these superstitions have very ancient beliefs, and they get translated by local cultures. If you sing at a table, you're said to maybe attract evil spirits. The ancient Chinese were worried about either singing at a table or bragging, and even if people were by themselves in a fairly intimate setting, they would kind of caution one another and look carefully around them before they spoke of their wealth or their finance. There's always been this idea that silence has a kind of occult power. And when you break silence, you might be tempting evil spirits or fairies to play some sort of mischief on you if they overhear you.
In the Middle East, it is supposed to be good luck to keep the little tiny part of the umbilical cord that eventually dries off and falls off the belly button.
Yes.
And you're supposed to keep that forever.
Yes.
That's kind of strange.
It's very interesting. It's supposed to be kind of a conduit of life. It's supposed to be something that connects us humans to some higher principle of life. And of course, in medicine today, it's recognized that cells or blood from an umbilical cord can also have extraordinary regenerative powers. So it's interesting how ancient superstitions and modern science will sometimes coalesce.
One of my favorites, it's a Thanksgiving favorite, of course, too, is the wishbone, where two people make a wish, they hold each end of the bone, they break it, and the person with the longer end gets the wish.
Yes, that's right. That's an ancient English custom, actually. And it's fascinating. When I was a kid, we would look forward to that above anything else at the Thanksgiving table. And everybody would want to grab hold of a wishbone. It's just one of these fascinating bits of folklore that, again, it survived the centuries.
This one's probably true. If you wash your car, it'll probably rain.
Oh, it's definitely true. If you have a tea time on the golf course, it'll also probably rain.
Yeah. Who comes up with these things, Mitch?
They pass through so many bloodlines. It's really quite fascinating. You know, when I was a kid, my mother used to say that there was a Jewish superstition that if you didn't want it to rain, like if you were having a party or a wedding outside or something, you should stick a knife in the ground. Years and years later, I discovered that's actually a West African custom. In West Africa, people believe that the thunder god, the rain god, Chongo, has an axe which he uses to cut up the clouds, and he can make it rain or he can cause rain to stop. And African Americans in this country, in the Deep South, during the days of slavery and afterward, if they didn't want it to rain, they would take a hatchet or a knife or an axe and stick it in the ground so as to sort of imitate Chongo, the thunder god, chopping up the clouds. This same custom migrated into Jewish culture. My mother thought it was a Jewish custom. In fact, it was an African tribal custom. It's amazing how these things travel. I mean, they're almost this vast primeval internet of information.
Mitch, when we come back, we're going to take phone calls, both questions for you on superstitions and share your family superstition with us.